Hello and welcome to a special edition of the Post podcast. Well, data harvesting, share price uncertainty and political problems. It's all going on with Facebook at the moment. And even today, the share price, yesterday, the share price was down again. Jack Horgan-Jones, our chief reporter, you've been following this for a couple of weeks. How come at this point, Facebook has not been able to stem the flow? It remains bloodied and it remains battered. And people are still talking about further declines of its stock.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, right? Because, I mean, obviously, Facebook was always seen as one of these bulletproof shares, you know.
Well, it just seemed to go one way.
Exactly. It seemed like the only way was up for these group of shares, roughly known as the FANG, Facebook, Apple, Amazon, and then I can't remember the other ones.
Google's
the last one, yeah. But basically, as I say, these were seen as more or less impervious to wider macro trends. So I think they performed pretty well, even when we had the volatility bubble earlier on this year. So what's happened? Basically, this all stems back to the Cambridge Analytica scandal that came out in The Observer and The New York Times in recent weeks. And there's always been a kind of traditional bearish case for, you know, being short on Facebook, being short on these stocks. It was never particularly popular, but here's what it was. It was that, you know, the costs of these companies were incurring were going to get out of control, and that it was going to basically cost them too much to keep adding users, and that there might be some sort of glass ceiling on the effectiveness of online advertising and of social media targeting. And that's the kind of the boilerplate, you know, case for being negative on them. That has now been accentuated by these now totally unleashed fears over regulatory interference and user uncertainty about the platform.
But their data, but who knows what about who and how it's being used.
Yeah, exactly. So let's go through them one by one. I think we'll take the user uncertainty at the moment. I mean, everyone will have seen these kind of, you know, hashtag delete Facebook campaigns. And people,
Elon Musk even
exactly.
behind it.
Yeah, and I actually thought that the steam was going out of it a little bit before Elon Musk did that, and then all of a sudden there's this new kind of momentum to that, and there's this very kind of performative thing of people, you know, screenshotting them, deleting their Facebook accounts and posting it on Twitter, who are then probably taking that data.
But there is a certain irony of people sharing their deletion of social media upon social media, but it goes into the whole madness of, I just want to talk about the user, what you're talking about.
Exactly. So, like, that kind of gets to the point. I mean, you're deleting one social media account and posting on the other. I think that social media is too sticky and Facebook is too sticky for this to be a real massive threat. I don't think you're going to see a substantial amount of people out of the 2 billion odd that use Facebook leaving the platform. And therefore, I think as long as those people are there, the advertisers are going to be there. You know, so that's kind of the long-term secular trend that has supported Facebook. I don't I see it taking a bit of a hit, but
this is focused attention on the regulation.
Exactly. I think that's really where a lot of this nervousness, this investor nervousness, is coming from, because now Facebook seem to be caught in this kind of doom loop. You know, there are more and more negative stories coming out about the platform all the time. I mean, even just this morning, you have a ruling from the New Zealand privacy regulator saying that Facebook didn't comply with standards there. So you have this kind of negative momentum around Facebook, and you have this sense that they just keep getting lapped by bad news, that they cannot they can't fight back against this. And as part of those that series of bad news stories emerging, and we should mention as well that the Guardian Observer are still hammering them every weekend, you're likely to get some sort of political regulatory reaction, right? And the reason why that is a concern for investors is that if politicians and regulators jump in and alter the way in which Facebook can very effectively deploy user data to enable advertisers to target those users more very effectively, that turns off the money pipe. As we wrote at the weekend, that's the license to print money. I mean, a fine on these guys only really hurts them so much. You know, they have so much money, they don't know what to do with it. It's just like floating offshore somewhere. It doesn't matter if you take $6 billion of that. What matters is if you affect their ability to keep generating that money.
Yeah, if you take that money and they're not adding to it.
Exactly.
I mean, companies, as we all know, share prices, they need to be growing. You need an investor case, and investor case is all around growth.
Yeah. And that's part of the problem with Facebook as well. I mean, and that is what a lot of analysts are saying last week, that, you know, this shines a light on what is effectively, or what has become, a rotten corporate culture at Facebook that was all about, you know, facilitating facilitating advertisers, because the efficacy of advertisers targeting users is what drove share price performance. And contrary to the way they presented themselves as these kind of utopian tech evangelists, actually they had become a fairly nasty company with some fairly nasty work practices, and that's now being laid bare.
I mean, once again, when there is a multinational controversy, Ireland appears to be in the thick of it. And this time it's nothing to do with tax. Now, there is another issue there to do with tax, but not...
It's always to do with tax.
It's always sitting in the background, not this particular issue. I mean, due to the fact their European headquarters are here, they're regulated here in terms of data protection.
Yeah.
So you've got this situation whereby a very small office in Ireland has to regulate some of the biggest companies in the world across Europe.
Yeah.
And I suppose that's why people are now looking at Ireland's role in this particular operation.
They are. And as one guy put it to me last week, when was the last time David ever beat Goliath in a business sense? This is a David and Goliath kind of face-off. You know, this is the Data Protection Commissioner in Ireland, which for all intents and purposes is a small office set up to look after the needs of a smallish country, all of a sudden being asked to be point man for the interests of 450 million European consumers, and not only on Facebook but on many other social media platforms and tech platforms. And you know, I don't want to jump up and end the DPC, but there's a limit to what they can actually do here, you know?
Yeah, without limitless resources.
Yeah, Facebook has dozens of lawyers working on just the issue of GDPR and, you know, countless billions to throw at any issue that might come up. There is an essential and inescapable asymmetry to the relationship, to the power relationship between Facebook and Ireland, and obviously the DPC are at the front of that.
You were writing at the weekend about how Facebook resisted attempts from the Irish regulator to clamp down on apps at the centre of this controversy. Can you just explain that to us?
Yeah, so
it gives us a really good insight into the dynamic between Data Protection Commissioner in Ireland, Facebook, and the outcomes, the impact and the import of what's been going on between them.
Yeah, exactly. So first of all, let's take a moment just to discuss the kind of apps that we're talking about, these Facebook apps, which basically were very popular amongst app developers around kind of 2010, 2011. And the reason they were popular is because they allowed you to harvest huge amounts of data. So if you took a quiz, but you were friends with everyone who works out there in the Business Post newsroom, the app could harvest all their data without them giving any permission. And if that sounds a little funny, that's because it is. And back in 2011 and 2012, these kind of apps were flagged up by the Data Protection Commissioner during audits of Facebook. And they said, look, we're not quite sure we like the look of these things. But it wasn't until 2014 that Facebook actually responded by changing its approach to these apps. Okay, so there's always been this gap that has been unexplained between the problem being identified by the Data Protection Commissioner and Facebook actually doing something about it. And now, going on what the Data Protection Commissioner told us at the weekend, it seems to be that there was at least some resistance from Facebook, who they say asserted a legal right to continue doing this. And that then raises a couple of questions, right? So, I mean, obviously you have a problem being flagged and Facebook refusing to solve it for a few years. Now, is that because the Data Protection Commissioner wasn't interested in forcing Facebook to solve it? Or is it because they weren't capable of forcing Facebook to solve it? I would argue it's semantics. It doesn't really matter. The real key thing here is actually that the Data Protection Commissioner from Ireland can't bend Facebook to its will. And if that's
a dynamic going forward... It's the outcome.
Yeah, that's a real problem. Ian, you want to talk about Ireland Inc. And tax and data?
Well, yeah, I just think that there's an issue here, and I think it's coming more and more to the fore. I think we've seen it on tax, we're seeing it on data now, that an awful lot of our European colleagues are looking at all of this and saying, just what is Ireland's relationship with multinationals? You know, if you look at all of the controversies in relation to Facebook, their tax structure, and you can say the same about Google or Apple or any of those companies, and in relation to data, despite the best efforts of the Data Protection Commissioners, Ireland has been an enabler for Facebook and others to make huge sums of money. And that's part of our industrial policy. It's an industrial policy we've had from the days of Lamass and T.K. Whittaker in the late 1950s. And I think this cozy relationship with multinationals is coming more and more under threat. And I know Stephen Kinsella has been writing about it, I've been writing about it. I think there's a time, and it's coming more and more obvious, that Ireland's industrial model has to change. That the government essentially acting as a proxy in certain cases for the interests of multinationals isn't really tenable in a post-Brexit world where you're talking about tax harmonisation. Trump is talking about trade tariffs. And I just wonder, might this spur, and I'm interested in your thoughts, might this spur the Irish government to try and redefine or move on our industrial policy away from our love affair with foreign direct investment? Now, don't get me wrong, foreign direct investment has been crucially important to Ireland's economic development. But times change.
Yeah.
How long can we, you know, continue to attract every single big ticket tech company to come here? I don't know. I just think I think we might be at the precipice of a turning point for where the economy is going.
I agree. And I think it's something that we've been raising for a while. You know, the inherent risks. And Stephen, as you said, had a very good column on this at the weekend. The inherent risks that are kind of building up in the Irish economy. And, you know, it's prudent to look to throw that forward and say, you know, how could this end badly for us? Because we didn't do that during the Celtic Tiger, and we all know the consequences that resulted from that.
Like, if you look at it, if you see Intercom, which raised a load of money, it's the Irish tech company, raised a load of money, and people are now saying it's valued at more than $1 billion. So it's a unicorn. It's probably the first indigenous tech unicorn that we've managed to come up with. I mean, there's an example of creating a multinational from Ireland and allowing it to grow and scale. I suppose we need, if we are to change our industrial policy, we need to see more and more of that, because I think Irish companies and tech founders, the first instinct is when they get a really good offer for their business.
I think it's Irish business in general, actually. I mean, there's always been this kind of issue around, you know, appropriate succession planning and you know, the fact that we, outside of the likes of Glanbia and so on, we don't really have world beaters. I think
we can name them. You know, you can talk about Glanbia, you can talk about the Kerry Group, you know, CRH is a, you know, Ryanair. But we can name all these companies, you know, and you know, Kingspan will be coming into that space as it continues its growth. But you can name the companies that are Irish multinationals or transnational companies. And the problem with them is there's been very few have come onto that list that weren't on that list 10, 15, 20, 25, 30 years ago.
Yeah, I suppose what we're saying is it shouldn't be beyond the ken of the kind of the state and the business leadership of the country to come together and say, right, if the lights went off tomorrow, what would we have to fall back on? And that's the kind of prudent planning that I think we'd like to see being exhibited. Yeah. You know?
So look, we started with Facebook, we'll finish with Facebook. Where do you see this thing going?
I don't see... Let's bring it back to their core offering. What are they? They're a well-constructed platform that allows users to trade their data for access to that platform and then advertisers to target those users. This isn't fatal for Facebook. I don't think we're going to be seeing Facebook supernovaing overnight. They're going to be around for a while. The big unanswered question is what's going to happen from a regulatory point of view, and will this add to calls for an intervention, perhaps along antitrust lines, into these tech giants? Will it raise questions about just how big they're becoming, how powerful they're becoming, and whether we can trust them? And, you know, along the lines of what happened in the early 20th century, the oil companies, are they going to be busted up? Is that even possible? That's where I think this debate is going to go.
Okay, well, Jack, thanks very much for joining me. Thank you very much.